It is 3 hours Universal Time. Stay tuned for Daybreak Africa coming up after these latest world news headlines.
Islamic State militants kill Iraqi guards at Syrian border. Explosions and gun attacks hit Nigerian towns. I'm Ray Kugel reporting from Washington. Islamic State militants killed at least 16 Iraqi border guards in an assault Monday on a remote outpost near the Syrian frontier. At least four other guards were wounded in the attack on their headquarters at Al-Walid in the westernmost part of Anbar province. It's not immediately clear how many Islamic State fighters were killed or wounded. Suspected Islamic extremists attacked two northeastern Nigerian state capitals Monday, targeting a crowded market and police facility. Witnesses in Maiduguri and Borno states say two explosions ripped through a crowded market, killing at least five people. The suicide bombers are said to be two women. Earlier in the day, residents of Damaturu, the capital of Yobe State, said suspected Boko Haram militants attacked a police facility in the city. Security forces and civilian vigilantes reported beating back the attack and claimed to have killed dozens of militants. Appeals judges at the International Criminal Court have upheld the conviction of Congolese warlord Thomas Lubanga. The judges at the court in The Hague, Netherlands, confirmed Lubanga's 14-year sentence Monday for his role in the recruitment and use of child soldiers during the conflict more than a decade ago in the gold-rich Ituri region in the Democratic Republic of Congo. Lubanga was convicted of abducting children as young as 11 years old. They came from homes, schools, and football fields and forced them to fight. He has already spent 8 years in prison. This is VOA News. The World Health Organization says the deadly Ebola disease that's killed more than 6,000 people in West Africa is slowing down. The UN agency says its targets of isolating and treating 70% of cases and safely burying 70% of Ebola victims in Liberia, Sierra Leone, and Guinea by December 1st were largely on track. Afghanistan's president and chief executive are at NATO headquarters in Brussels to formalize the country's new relationship with the alliance, which will end its more than 10-year combat mission in Afghanistan at the end of this month. VOA's Al Pessin reports.
The two Afghan leaders walked into NATO headquarters at dusk, greeted by new Secretary General Jens Stoltenberg. Tuesday, they will meet with the foreign ministers of the 28 NATO member states and senior officials of dozens of partner nations that have sent troops to Afghanistan over the years. From January 1st, Afghan forces will have full responsibility for security and combat throughout the country, and NATO troops will work only as advisors and trainers. Plans for that were finalized on Sunday when Afghan President Ashraf Ghani signed agreements with NATO and the United States. Al Pessin, London.
Russia's President Vladimir Putin says Moscow is scrapping a multi-billion-dollar gas pipeline project for southern Europe and instead will increase gas supplies to Turkey. During a visit to Turkey's capital Ankara on Monday, President Putin said the European Union's objections to the South Stream pipeline have forced Russia to shift its focus elsewhere. After meeting with Turkey's President Recep Tayyip Erdogan, Mr. Putin said Russia will increase gas supplies to Turkey across an existing pipeline. He also said Moscow will work to create a new pipeline to Turkey under the Black Sea. A South Korean fishing vessel with a 60-man crew sank Monday in the Bering Sea off Russia's Far East, leaving one dead and 52 missing. Ships in the area are conducting a search and rescue mission that is being hampered by bad weather with high winds and pounding waves. Three Hong Kong student leaders have started what they call an indefinite hunger strike to pressure the government to make concessions on democratic reforms. The three activists declared the hunger strike late Monday, just hours after leading a failed attempt by pro-democracy protesters to besiege the government's Hong Kong Island headquarters. President Obama is calling for $260 million more in federal spending to improve police forces around the country. The move is in response to the shooting of an unarmed black teenager by a white policeman during a street confrontation last August in the central town of Ferguson, Missouri. Mr. Obama met with cabinet, civil rights leaders, and law enforcement officials and made the announcement.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Barty in Washington. Today is Tuesday, December 2nd, and here are some of the stories we are covering. The World Health Organization says Ebola is stabilizing West Africa, but far from over.
In all three countries, it's clear now that more than 70% of the Ebola deaths that we know about are buried safely. And this is because in the past 60 days, the number of safe burial teams has more than doubled.
Bruce A. Ward is the Assistant Director General of the World Health Organization. Militants on Monday attacked two state capitals in Nigeria. The ICC upholds the conviction of Congolese rebel leader Thomas Lubanga. And Namibia's ruling SWAPO party's candidate wins an impressive victory in last Friday's presidential elections.
I think he has won by that big margin because the people of Namibia were really thirsty for change for quite a long time.
Phil Yanangolo Sr. is the executive director of Namibia Rights. The mother of South Africa's AIDS lawsuit reflects on her legacy as World AIDS Day was celebrated yesterday, and 13 countries are honored for their effort in fighting hunger. Those stories plus Mark Omar's portion of our listener of the day are coming up on Daybreak Africa. The World Health Organization says the Ebola epidemic in West Africa is slowing down and stabilizing in some places, but it's far from over. Lisa Schlein reports from the WHO headquarters in Geneva.
The World Health Organization reports two United Nations targets have been partially met, to have 70% of Ebola-infected people into treatment and to have 70% of fatalities safely buried by December 1st. WHO officials think more than 70% of those ill with Ebola are in treatment in Liberia and Guinea. However, the WHO notes Sierra Leone falls short of this goal. It says the 70% target is probably being met in most places, but a number of hotspots remain in the western part of the country. It says another few weeks will be needed before the 70% target is met. WHO Assistant Director General Bruce Aylward says there is some good news on the second goal.
In all three countries, it's clear now that more than 70% of the Ebola deaths that we know about are buried safely. And this is because in the past 60 days, the number of safe burial teams has more than doubled from probably less than 100 or thereabouts to nearly 200 or just over. I think we're squeaking in at 202.
While significant progress has been made toward the 70-70 goal, Aylward says that is not good enough to stop Ebola. He calls it an important milestone along the way, but eventually he says the three Ebola-stricken countries must reach 100% treatment and safe burials. He says these actions will have to be complemented with more intense surveillance measures. He says it is critical to trace every person who has had contact with an Ebola victim and break the chain of transmission before the epidemic can be ended.
As the disease is falling like this, the actual number of people you're going to need and the geography that you're going to need to cover to get to zero is actually going to increase. Now you're going to have surveillance teams in every single district, every single county, every single prefecture to be able to find any remaining viruses, to be able to find the contacts of those cases, and then be able to systematically really turn the tables on this virus and hunt the virus rather than being hunted by it.
Aylward says about 20,000 local monitors will be needed to trace all those who have been in contact with an infected person. He says the World Health Organization will deploy around 400 people to every county to help train these people. He says the UN plans an intense six-month effort to try to get Ebola cases down to zero. And then he says at least 42 days will have to pass without any new cases before the epidemic can be declared over. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Militants have attacked two state capitals in Nigeria. As Chris Stein reports for VOA from Abuja, the attacks are widely seen to be the work of Boko Haram, which has been designated by the United States and European Union as a terrorist organization.
Early Monday, insurgents surged into the Yobe state capital, Damaturu, attacking a police station and sending university students fleeing their campus to hide in the woods. Later, two explosions tore through a market in Maiduguri, the capital of neighboring Borno State. While no group has taken responsibility, defense spokesman Major General Chris Olukolade says the Islamic extremist group Boko Haram is likely behind the attacks. The militants have been fighting the government for 5 years for control of Nigeria's northeast. Spokesman for the Yobe state government, Abdullahi Bego, describes the attack in Damaturu.
What we know is that they came into town early in the morning around 6:30 a.m. local, and they came through from the southern part of the city, from Gujuba, a town which is just some kilometers away from Damaturu. That's how they came into town, and they started attacking. But the security on the ground were on alert, and they did a very excellent job at repelling them.
Olukolade says the military deployed the army and the air force to ward off the attackers. Bego says security forces are now trying to find insurgents hiding inside the city.
So as I speak to you right now, the town of Damaturu remains in government control. The security forces have held the attack and forced the insurgents to flee. And those who were reported to be hiding in town are now being trailed by the security agent.
Bego says he did not know the number of casualties in Damaturu. He says reinforcements are on their way to the city.
We also have reports that a lot of reinforcements have been sent, you know, from neighboring towns, security reinforcements, soldiers coming in from Maiduguri, from Bauchi, to reinforce those who are on the ground.
Boko Haram has attacked Yobe State before, including schools and colleges in the towns of Patiskum and Mamudo. Two suicide bombers struck the same market last week in Maiduguri, killing dozens. Chris Stein for VOA News, Abuja.
Namibia's ruling Southwest African People Organization SWAPO Party has won a decisive victory in Friday's presidential and parliamentary elections. The Electoral Commission said Monday that SWAPO candidate and the country's prime minister, Hage Geingob, got nearly 87% of the vote, while his nearest rival, Mike Henry Venani of the Democratic Turnhill Alliance, received nearly 5% of the vote. SWAPO also won 77 seats in parliament to maintain a two-third majority. Phil Yanagolo Sr. is executive director of Namibia Rights, the country's largest human rights organization. He says Geingob won by a big margin because Namibians have been thirsty for change from the legacy of SWAPO founding president Sam Nujoma.
I think he has won by that big margin because the people of Namibia were really thirsty for change for quite a long time. They wanted to depart from the legacy of especially former President Nujoma and his successor. That is number one. Number two, he's very popular also among especially the population that is non-Ovambo. The Ovambo is the largest ethnic group in Namibia.
You said that Mr. Geingob won by this wide margin because the people were thirsty for change, but they voted for a SWAPO person. Is that a change?
It is actually change. It is nevertheless change because this is somebody who is seen as impartial and who is believed to be somebody who is even-handed, if not on the side of ethnic groups, members of the ethnic groups that are minority ethnic groups. So this could really be the reason why he has received such a huge support in terms of voting.
The Namibian election was Africa's first electronic balloting. How successful was it? Is this something that other African countries can learn from?
Yes, I believe that is clearly Namibia has paved the way for other African countries to follow suit. But that is in theory. In practice, there have been very serious problems with this so-called e-voting. And the Electoral Commission of Namibia has admitted themselves that they were been experiencing teething problems, that the personnel of the Electoral Commission did not know how to use this machine. So it took very long hours, such that, in fact, the 14 hours working period and the people were still outside the polling station, they did not vote. And this is why there are people who really think, how can this percentage be that high? Number two, there is one political party that actually, we can say, whose leaders never campaigned really, and this party has
Cheryl Yanangulo Sr. is Executive Director of Namibia Rights, the country's largest human rights organization. He was speaking with me from the capital, Windhoek. You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Tuesday, December 2nd, and please send your comments and opinions to daybreakafrica@voanews.com. Daybreak Africa time, 15 and a half minutes past the hour. The International Criminal Court, ICC, has upheld the conviction of Congolese warlord Thomas Lubanga, bringing its first case to a close. Lubanga, 53, who had been on trial since 2006, was convicted for using child soldiers during a conflict in Congo's mineral-rich Ituri region between 2002 and 2003. Lisa Bryan reports for VOA from Paris.
The appeals chamber, by majority, Chatsong partly dissenting.
Rights groups hailed the International Criminal Court's final judgment, which was unequivocal. The Hague Tribunal rejected all seven grounds of appeal presented by the lawyers for Congolese warlord Thomas Lubanga. It was also historic. This is the first appeals verdict of the 12-year-old court and draws the court's first and lengthiest case to a close.
Lubanga also challenges the trial chamber's assessment of specific video excerpts and the reasonableness.
Lubanga was dressed in a traditional blue African gown for the event. He looked sober as he listened to presiding judge Erki Kurula read the verdict. Now 53, he has been on trial since 2006. 2 years ago, he was convicted and sentenced to 14 years in jail on war crimes charges for using child soldiers in Eastern Democratic Republic of Congo between 2002 and 2003. His lawyers appealed his verdict on several grounds, including claims that video evidence of child soldiers in his army was not reliable. They also argued his sentence was too long. While rejecting these arguments, the court also rejected the prosecution's demand for a much longer sentence of 30 years. Lubanga is expected to serve his sentence in one of the ICC member countries. But the 8 years he's already spent in detention will be counted towards his sentence. He could be eligible for early release by next year. The ICC has been criticized for being slow in delivering judgment. Besides Lubanga's, the court has wrapped up only two other cases. Lisa Bryant for VOA News, Paris.
Just a decade ago, South Africa was a grim place for AIDS sufferers and worse for pregnant women who had no access to drugs that would prevent them from giving the life-threatening virus to their babies. That changed when a group of South African patients stepped forward and sued for access to cheaper drugs. VOA's Anita Power spoke with one of those activists in Johannesburg on World AIDS Day yesterday, Monday.
Hazel Tao says she remembers the dark days of HIV in South Africa, the nation with the world's highest burden of the disease. But the 45-year-old is not talking about the now distant year of 1991 when she was first diagnosed with HIV. She is talking about her decision in 2002 to reveal her status to the entire country by suing in South African court for access to cheaper AIDS drugs, which were then behind a high wall of patent protection. At the time, she was working as an HIV counselor and spending more than one-fifth of her pay on medication. In winning that landmark case, she became the mother of a cause, and the results have been living and breathing HIV-free babies. Her fight to bring down drug prices also enabled widespread availability of preventative medicines for pregnant HIV-positive women. Today, transmission rates between mothers and children hover below 3% in South Africa. And for that, this World AIDS Day, more than two decades after her diagnosis, Tao says she is thankful that she and about 2.5 million South Africans have access to free AIDS medicine.
Things are much, much, much better. Pregnant women access treatment to prevent their unborn baby. For people tested positive, treatment is accessible, and there are different regimens of treatment.
Doctors Without Borders head HIV-TB coordinator for Southern Africa, Eric Gomar, says much has changed since he arrived in South Africa in 1999.
While everybody speaks about reducing incidence, reducing new infection, it's extremely difficult to do with sexual transmission. But in this case, mother-to-child transmission, actually it's an easy-to-do intervention. When I arrived here, we had something like 20-22% transmission, meaning one mother upon 5 would give birth to an HIV-positive child. And it has been reduced now to 2.7% nationwide.
Dr. Gomar and Tao say the fight now is to extend antenatal treatment to all women in South Africa and bring the mother-to-child transmission rate down even further. Many women in poor and rural communities do not receive antiretroviral treatment in time to prevent their babies from contracting HIV. And so to this day, thousands of South Africans are born with this chronic disease. But this World AIDS Day, millions of HIV-free babies in South Africa owe their health to the fruits of her labor. Anita Powell, VOA News, Johannesburg.
The United Nations this week recognized 13 countries for making what it calls outstanding progress in fighting hunger. The head of the Food and Agriculture Organization says those countries have overcome major challenges in difficult economic times. VOA's Joel Di Capua reports.
FAO Chief José Graziano da Silva says there is reason for optimism in the fight against hunger, but warns against complacency.
According to FAO most recent hunger figures, the number of hungry people around the world fell by 205 million since the beginning in the 90s. Nevertheless, 800 million people still suffer from hunger, one out of 9 people around the planet.
He also says the rate of malnutrition is on the rise around the world. This includes an increase in obesity in low- and middle-income countries as more nations adopt a Western-style diet. The FAO has honored Brazil, Cameroon, Ethiopia, Gabon, the Gambia, and Iran, as well as the Pacific Island nation of Kiribati, Malaysia, Mauritania, Mauritius, Mexico, the Philippines, and Uruguay.
You have overcome major challenges in difficult global economic conditions and policy environment. You have demonstrated the will and mobilized the means for that. In behalf of FAO, I commend your efforts and congratulate you on your success.
The 1996 World Food Summit approved the Rome Declaration. It called for a reduction by half the number of chronically malnourished people by 2015.
Sadly, we are far from the World Food Summit goal at the global level, but some 25 countries have already reached it, thus demonstrating that more ambitious goals can be reached if there is the political will to do so.
2015 is also when the Millennium Development Goals come due. One of those goals is eradicating extreme poverty and hunger.
I'm delighted to say that progress in hunger eradication is gaining momentum. Not only we are close to the hunger target of the Millennium Development Goals at the global level, but already 63 developed countries have achieved it. It will represent more or less half of the developing countries that FAO monitors since 1990.
The FAO Director General says that much progress has been made in Asia, Latin America and the Caribbean, and North Africa. However, Graziano da Silva adds, much more needs to be done in sub-Saharan Africa, South Asia, and some parts of the Middle East. Joe DiCapua, VOA News, Washington.
It's time now for Daybreak Africa Sports, and here is Mark Ouma in Johannesburg, South Africa. Very good Tuesday morning to you, Mark.
Good morning, James. In our Daybreak Africa Sports News, we begin with basketball. Nigeria's First Bank beat Tunisia's CS Sfax in 77-66 at the Africa Women's Club Basketball Championships in Sfax, Tunisia on Monday. Angolan defending champions Inter Club beat Tunisia's SC Police Orientation 73-56, while Nigeria's Dolphins overpowered Kenya's United States International University 102-58. Staying in Tunisia, Tunisia's ES Rades pipped Egypt's Sporting Alexandria 66-65. In a thrilling encounter at the Africa Men's Basketball Club Championship Cup Zone 1 qualifiers in Tunis on Monday. Morocco's IR Tangier beat Algeria's CRB Der El Beida 57-50, and Tunisia's US Monastir beat Morocco's Al Hoshiema 84-70. Turning to athletics, South Africa's Cornel Frederick says winning the 400-meter hurdles gold medal at the British Commonwealth Games spurred him on to the most successful year of his his career, he explains.
It was a successful year for me. I didn't expect 3 gold medals in 1 year. My goal this season was just to run consistent 48 seconds and also just to win a medal at the Commonwealth Games. That was my biggest goal for this season. When I got to the Commonwealth Games, I decided that I came all the way to the final, not just to be in the final, but to actually win the final. And I put in everything, and at the end of the day, everything worked out for me.
That must have opened the floodgates for the Africa Championships and later the Continental Cup.
I got so much confidence from that win in Glasgow. After beating the world champion, Jayu Gordon, in the Commonwealth Games, gave me a lot of confidence and also a big boost for the Africa Champs. I never won an African title at senior level, so I wanted to prove myself that I'm one of the best in Africa in 400-meter hurdles. I got the opportunity to also represent Africa at the Continental Championships. That was also a big achievement in my career at the moment. There I got to run against Ave Coulson of Puerto Rico and Michael Tinsley, who is currently the Olympic silver medalist and world silver medalist, and I got to beat them both in a once-off race, and that was also a big highlight in my career so far.
That was South Africa's Cornel Fredericks, the British Commonwealth Games, the Africa champion, and the IAAF Continental Cup 400-meter hurdle gold medalist, speaking in Johannesburg, South Africa. And that's it for Daybreak Africa Sports News. I'm Mark Omer in Johannesburg, South Africa. Back to you, James, in Washington.
And thank you, Mark. Have a very good day. Here's our listener mail for this Tuesday morning, December 2nd.
Dear viewer, please permit me to call on National Orientation Agency to educate Nigerians that are going into politics that it is wrong and unethical for a governor to be fighting for a senatorial seat, the governor's wife fighting for House of Representatives seat, and the governor's son or daughter fighting for House of Assembly seat. That this is no longer democracy. It has now turned to politics of friends and homemade politics. Comrade Mass Patrick Korokraf, over Blue Premises, Atani Arachuku in Abia State, Nigeria.
We thank you, listener, for your comment, and please send your viewpoints to daybreakafrica@voanews.com. Briefly, before we leave you, a summary of Africa news. The World Health Organization on Monday had some rare good news on the deadly Ebola disease that has killed more than 6,000 people in West Africa. Its rapid spread is slowing. The UN agency said its targets of isolating and treating 70% of cases in Liberia, Sierra Leone, and Guinea by December 1st were largely on track. Namibia's ruling party has trounced all rivals in the presidential and parliamentary election, with Prime Minister Hage Geingob getting nearly 87% of the vote. The country's electoral commission announced on Monday that the ruling SWAPO party won 80% of the vote in Friday's parliamentary elections. And suspected Islamic extremists attacked 2 northeastern Nigerian state capitals on Monday, targeting a crowded market and a police facility. That's it for this Tuesday, December 2nd edition of Daybreak Africa. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Clotty and Ricky Stryak, as well as sports editor Mark Oman, along with our engineer James Harmon, I am James Butte in Washington, hoping that everybody in Africa will have a very good day.
Celebrate the sounds of Africa today, yesterday, and tomorrow. That's our mission in your show, Music Time in Africa. Hello, I'm your host, Heather Maxwell. Join me every Saturday and Sunday at 1500 and 2000 UTC and discover the best Pan-African music in the world. We play it all right here, only the best on VOA Africa.
Next time on Straight Talk Africa, remembering Dr. Ali Mazarui, one of Africa's greatest thinkers. Dr. Mazarui died October 12th. The Kenyan intellectual spoke for the continent and leaves generations past and present and future. That's next time on VOA Africa.